psalm. It's one that we've preached from many times. I think I've preached 8 different messages here on Psalm 46. It easily could preach a year or two series on this psalm. We want to look at it again this evening. It should be an encouragement to all of God's people. Psalm 46, we'll begin reading with verse 1. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, because God is our refuge and strength, and a very present help in trouble, will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof, that is of the sea, roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He, God, uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord. What desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow, cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Again, as we've said many times, one of the most amazing features of the Psalms is the relevancy to our lives. They are all God-designed so that the child of God can very easily see application to themselves and to their own circumstances. Reading the 46th Psalm, there's a very orderly flow as the psalmist is heard speaking in verses 1 through 9, and he speaks wonderful and glorious things of the Lord. But in verse 10, the flow is interrupted, and God is no longer being spoken of. God is speaking in verse 10. And then in verse 11, the psalmist resumes speaking of the Lord. But here in verse 10, God interrupts the psalmist and speaks. And verse 10 is really the climax of the psalm. Again, God is speaking in verse 10. No longer the psalmist, but God. So in verse 10, God interrupts. He does so to give a reminder of himself and to exhort the psalmist and us as well. What we read in verse 10 is the instruction, the exhortation, the application of the entire psalm. We want to take the main thought of the message from what we read here in verse 10. We want to speak on God's blessed, reminding interruptions. It's a wonderful thing when God interrupts our lives and speaks directly to us. I want to first of all and look at just the details of the psalm without going into any great detail. We've done that in the past. Just kind of give an overview of the entire psalm. Helps us to appreciate verse 10 a little more. First of all, consider the arrangement of the psalm. It is seen in the threefold usage of the word Selah. The psalm divides itself at those three points, verse 3, verse 7, and verse 11. And we all know that Selah was a musical pause. But for you and I today, for the reader, it's a place to pause and to give thought to what you've just read. Most, when reading the Word of God, do not pause enough to give serious thought to what they have read. The Psalms, we have this word Selah to remind us to stop and think, to stop and meditate. So Selah is a reminder to pause. Again, we've said it many times, it's not how much scripture you read in a day. That's, you can read 50 chapters. Another person can read two words. It's what you get out of it that matters. It's not a contest to see who can read the most. And really, if you read the Bible correctly, unless you read it 24/7, you're not going to read it through in a year anyway. If you read it correctly, where you stop and think about what you're reading. We also see the setting of the psalm, which is very important. From the language of the psalm, it appears to have been written during a time of extreme difficulty. The very opening thought is God as a present tense refuge. God is our refuge. That's present tense. That means there was a need for such right then. The very word refuge is suggestive of a storm or danger or need. So the psalm was written during such a time. He's also presented as our strength, which suggests that we are weak, and also speaks of our inability. He's also spoken of there in verse 1 as our help, suggesting the need of personal assistance, relief, and supply. And notice it is a very present help, suggesting a situation of great seriousness, suggesting a situation of urgency. We also see in the first verse the word trouble. The specifics are not given. And trouble, of course, can be of great variety and can be in the realm of the physical, the emotional, or the spiritual. Can take on many forms, pressures, distress, problems, trials, griefs, sorrows, cares, sufferings, burdens, many, many forms. And these can all vary in degree, and they can vary in duration as well. And it is, in verse 1, it's not just trouble, but it's in trouble, conveying the idea of being surrounded and fenced in with trouble. God is our refuge and strength in trouble. In verse 2, you have the resolve of the psalmist not to fear, which suggests that it was a time of fear. Also in verse 2 and 3, there's a picture of the severity of the trouble. It is seen in the illustrations that he gives of an earthquake, so severe that the mountains slip into the sea. This is a picture of something that is sudden, and there's really nothing you can do. I mean, as we said a A couple of weeks ago, we preached on Psalm 46, stressing God is our refuge. When the mountains slip in the sea, try to stop it. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. And many times there are situations in our life, there's nothing you can do. And that's really not a bad place to be, by the way. So he illustrates an earthquake. He also speaks of the force and fury of a storm and flood. Verses 2 and 3, again, he uses the images of the earth and the mountains. Things that appear stable. Things that you think are stable. They represent the things that you think you can count on. But yet they're moved. They're moved into the sea. What you have in verses 2 and 3 is a picture of everything falling apart. And there's nothing you can do to fix it. It's all falling apart. In verse 5, speaking of Jerusalem, she shall not be moved. Suggestive of a present threat to the city of Jerusalem when this psalm was written. In verse 6, we see the heathen raged. That is, they roared. It's a picture of agitation, a picture of fury, wrath, outrage, and resentment of the ungodly. We also see in verse 6 that the kingdoms were moved, conveying the idea of violence and an overthrow. In verse 8, there is the word desolations, suggesting a state of emptiness and destruction. Verse 9, mentioned there are wars. It is battle and struggle. The spear and the chariot, emblems of enemy power and force. In verse 10, we read again of the heathen. And then we read the words of God, I will be exalted, there in verse 10. Suggesting that at that time he was being discredited and dishonored. But I will be exalted. So from all of this, we see that the setting of the psalm is one of crisis. It's really a pretty apt picture of our society and our world today. It is a crisis. It is dire straits. Then we have the theme of the psalm. Believe it or not, the theme is not what we just saw in the setting. Consider everything in this psalm in its setting. Again, the setting is one of crisis. And in this setting, the psalmist begins the psalm and ends the psalm with the fact of God. Begins and ends. The theme and the focus of the psalm is not the setting already mentioned. It's not the trouble. That's never the theme. And that is never to be the focus. The theme and the subject of the psalm is the overwhelming fact of God. That's to be the theme of our life. Beginning and ending and everything in between is to be about God. So the emphasis, the accent of the psalm is not the trouble, is not the threats. The theme and the accent of the psalm is God. The name God, Elohim, occurs seven times in Psalm 46. The name Lord, all caps, Jehovah, appears three times. The title Most High, we see one time. There is the personal pronoun He, referring to God, five times. Personal pronoun I, referring to Him, three times. That's 19 mentions of God in the psalm. 19 times God is mentioned in 11 verses. So what's the psalmist doing? He is really directing our attention away from the catastrophic happenings of verses 2 and 3 to the absoluteness of God, to the overwhelming fact of God. We read the words, God is, in verses 1 and 5. We read, the Lord of hosts is, verse 7 and verse 11. It is emphatically declared, in the midst of the trouble, in the midst of that which is catastrophic, in the midst of that which there's really nothing you can do, it is emphatically declared that He is God. That is an exclusive, it is an all-inclusive, it is an exhaustive statement. God is. That is without, that is a statement made with no bounds and no limits. God is. God is. It's perpetual. It's infinite. It's everlasting. God is. He is absolute. And this is so of everything said of God in this psalm. Everything that's said about God in this psalm, there's many things. He is. So the theme of the psalm is whatever happens, and come what may, God is who He is. Nothing changes that. It has no bearing upon the being of God. And that is seen from the four usages of the word though in verses 2 and 3. Four times in verses 2 and 3, twice in verse 2, twice in verse 3. You see the word though. And you put whatever you want on the other side of though, it has no bearing upon God. It has no bearing upon the being of God. It does not change who He is. That's always so. In verse 4, He's referred to as the Most High. What that simply means is He's more than anything else. Again, whatever's on the other side of though, He's more than. He's more than that. He's greater than that. In verse 5, we read of the gracious presence and help of God. God is in the midst of her. Speaking of Jerusalem, she shall not be moved. God shall help her. And that right early. And again, that right early implies an urgency. Implies that a crisis is at hand. And then in verse 6, there is the power of His voice. The heathen raged. They roared. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered His voice. the earth melted. The power of his voice. We get caught away, some caught up sometimes in the fact that the heathen rage. What about the power of his voice? The heathen's raging is nothing in comparison in light of his voice. In verse 7, he is presented as the Lord of hosts, speaking of the fact that he has all authority. He reigns supreme. Nothing changes that. Also in verse 7, he's the God of Jacob. We've preached on that several times. The God of Jacob. Perhaps the most precious title of God in all the Word of God. The God of Jacob. It's a reminder to us that he's a God of grace. He's a God of mercy. He's a God of love. The God of Jacob is a God of election. He's a God of patience, long-suffering, and compassion. The God of Jacob. I'm glad to know the God of Jacob. The God of Jacob is the one who meets the sinner. Not to destroy him, though he could, and has every right to do so. But he meets the sinner to bless him, just as he did Jacob. He's the one who goes to great lengths to mold and make something out of the sinner. He's the one who can overhaul and transform lives. He's the God of transforming power, the God of Jacob. The God of Jacob is the one who can bring the sinner to the end of their resources, just like that, and to a place of surrender. That's the God of Jacob. Don't ever look on someone and say, oh, they're so wicked, they'll never be saved. Don't forget the God of Jacob. Don't forget who he is. The God of Jacob is suitable to the unworthy. He's suitable to you and I. You see, the theme of the psalm is God. In verse 8, there are the works and doings of God. He says, come, behold the works of the Lord. That's a good exercise. Come and behold the works of the Lord. When we talk about the works of the Lord, I'm not just talking about creation, though those are wonderful works. Look at an individual. Behold the work of the Lord. Look at a child of God. Behold the work of the Lord. What desolations he hath made in the earth. In verse 9, there is the victory of God. He maketh wars to cease. He breaketh the spear or the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. And he does so with ease. There's no problem with God. In verse 10, there is the exaltation of God. God is speaking and he says, I will be exalted among the heathen. And he's exalted now among the heathen. People just don't see it. I will be exalted among the heathen. And in verse 11, what is said in verse 7 is repeated. Again, the psalm begins and ends with God. And the content in between is the Lord. And such should be our life. All about God. Nothing else is ever to become the theme the focus of our life. God is always to be the theme and the focus of our life. Again, the setting of the psalm, which we've already looked at, one of trouble, that's not the emphasis. The emphasis is God. It doesn't mean that we turn a blind eye to trouble, that we just pretend that it doesn't exist. What it means is it's not where we put the accent. It's not where we put the emphasis. There is God. And that is where the accent is to be. That is where the emphasis is to be. So you have the setting. Dire straits. In the midst of the setting, you have the theme, which is God. So in the midst of all the upheaval and disturbance that you read of in verses 2 and 3, God is everything that He is, and He is our refuge. He's our hiding place. He's our shelter. He's our strength, the one who gives power and vigor and stamina. He's our help, the one who is our assistance and support. He is our help. He is the one who can alleviate and bring relief. So you have the theme of the psalm. The nature of the psalm is the writing of one living life focused upon God. The mountains slip into the sea, and yet this individual can remain focused upon God. It is the writing of an individual whose life has been impacted by God, continues to be impacted by God, and living life with faith in God concerning the daily happenings of life. Is the writing of living the life enjoying God. I mean, read Psalm 46. Read everything he says about God. He's enjoying the Lord. He's refreshed by God. And again, this is in the setting of dire straits, in the setting of a crisis. And yet, this psalmist is enjoying God. Don't let the trouble rob you of your enjoyment of God. When that happens, the trouble has become your theme. God's no longer the theme. It is the writing of an individual reflecting upon God. Again, verses 1 through 9, and then he resumes in verse 11. He's reflecting upon God. He's speaking of God. We ought to often reflect upon the Lord. So what we see here is the nature of the troubles and the circumstances of the psalm did not identify or determine the life of the psalmist. We're not to be identified by our troubles. We're not to be defined by our troubles. We are to be identified and defined by God. That God is the theme. That God is our life. That's what we're to get caught up with. The tone of the psalm, no doubt, is one of praise. You read the psalm, you read everything he says, God is our refuge. Do you see any depression there? That's praise. God is our refuge, our strength, a very present help in trouble. It is a psalm of praise in the midst of trouble. It is a psalm of joy. It is a psalm of certainty. As you read the psalm, there's a tone of certainty all the way through. There's a tone of confidence. There's a tone of calm. He's not writing in hysteria. There's a tone of calm. Here's a man who knows God. And again, this is all in the midst of dire straits. Read the psalm. It's a psalm of worship. It's a psalm of adoration and reverence for God. It's a psalm of faith and assurance in God. So the psalmist, in the first 9 verses, is speaking of God. But then there's a shift in verse 10. Be still and know that I am God. God's now speaking. God has interrupted the thoughts of the psalmist. And you read through the psalm, and I believe that we can rightly conclude that the psalmist is in a pretty good place spiritually. As you read what he says of God, he's in a pretty good place spiritually. I mean, you read that, those words, those are not the words of someone who has left God. He's in a pretty good place, but he can be in a better one. And God interrupts in verse 10. I thank God, when we wander and go astray, God interrupts. I thank God that when we're in a fairly good spiritual place, God interrupts. God shows up and gives us a reminder. Thank God for His reminding interruptions. God in His mercy and goodness directs our attention to Himself. You say, well, the psalmist was already attentive upon God. You read everything he's saying of God, no doubt. But this changes everything. This gets even better. When God interrupts, you realize, I'm not saying this was the condition of the psalmist, but you realize that you and I, we can say wonderful things of God and still be oblivious to God. It can happen. And if that happens, what can change that is God interrupting and saying, hey, I'm God. We need that interruption in our lives. So let's look at this very briefly. He makes an explicit declaration. The key phrase in the statement. Again, he says, be still and know that I'm God. The key phrase there is, I am God. I am God. Do we not need to be reminded of that? By God, I am God. We can remind each other that God is God and be encouraged. But I'm here to tell you tonight, when God comes and stands by you and taps you on the shoulder and says, hey, I'm God, makes a big difference. I am God. That's exhaustive. It's an exclusive statement. When God says, I'm God, He's saying, I'm the one and only. There's no other. We read in Deuteronomy 4, verse 35, the Lord, He is God, there is none else. That's what He's saying when He says, I am God. He's saying, I'm Him, there is no one else. I'm all that you need. We hear God say in Isaiah 45 and 22, I am God and there is none else. Isaiah 46 and 9, I am God and there is none else and there is none like me. And that's what this is what God does. He interrupts just to remind the psalmist, I am God. There's no one else like me. We forget that from time to time. I am God. There's no bounds to that. There's no limits to that. I'm God. It was, I know the Lord can, but I am God. I am God. Oh, that we would hear those words in such a way that it would stir and inspire our hearts. God gives a command here. He says, be still. And it is in light of the fact that I am God. I am God. Because I am God, be still. Be. It's a command to a state of being. The state of being must precede the doing. It's easy to do. Being is an entirely different subject. And the stress needs to be put upon the being. Be. And the state of being here is still. Be still. That is, abstain from, cease, and discontinue your own ways. Why? I'm God. I'm God. Stop your own ways. I am God. Stop trying to fix it. I am God. We need that reminder. Over and over. Oh, how we need to hear and obey. Be still. That is a command to take our proper place before God. Why should we take our place before God? Because He is God. You need no other reason. I am God. Notice it is a call to awareness. Be still and know that I am God. Recognize and be aware that I am God. Know that. He's saying, be confident. Be persuaded, absolutely assured that I am God. Know that. Don't just believe it theologically. But know it in your life. I am God. It's important to realize to know this requires be still. Be still and know. First, be still. Take your proper place before God. Cease from your own ways. And now you can know. Now you can know. Be still and know. It's a call to faith. It is this knowledge that He is God. Remember Jesus at the well in John chapter 4. The woman at the well. He said, if thou knew who it was that speaks with thee, thou would have. That's true all the time. People say, I know, but they don't. Because if they knew, they would do. Be still and know. And it's this knowledge that enables us, this knowledge that He is God, that enables us to lean upon Him. We lean upon Him. Why? Because He's God. And we know He's God. It is this knowledge that He is God that enables us to seek Him. Why is it that God's people seek everything else before God? Because they really don't know that He's God. Because if they did, they'd seek Him. It's this knowledge that enables us to look to Him, to come to Him. And once we come to Him, we cleave and cast upon Him and rest in Him. Be still and know I am God. We need to hear that every day. We need to hear it several times a day. Every time we get beside ourselves over politics and whatever else, oh, that God would just sit next to us and say, be still and know that I am God. There's courage in those words. There's strength. There's comfort. There's gladness. So wherever you are today in your life, whatever is happening in your life, whatever your condition, you need to hear these words. Be still and know that I am God. Lord, would you remind me that every single day? Lord, would you come to me every day with those words? Be still and know that I am God. There's rich blessings there. There's unsearchable riches there. I am God. Need to live in the reality of those words. So God's psalmist speaks in verses 1 through 9. Verse 10, God speaks. Verse 11, the psalmist speaks again. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. It is a repeat, word for word, of verse 7. But since it follows God interrupting His life, I believe the tone of verse 11 is completely different than the tone of verse 7. Nothing wrong with the tone of verse 7. But don't you believe verse 11's with a little more excitement than it was in verse 7? A little more joy? A little more praise? You see, his life got better. When God appears to you and I, speaking directly to us, just simply reminding us, I am God. Things get better. Even if you're in a good spiritual state, you're in a better one now. Oh, how we need this interruption all the time. We ought to pray that God would interrupt our lives however He sees fit. And He does. God interruptions have saved our lives over and over. It really has. It spared us many things. But all the comfort. Everything's falling apart, verses 2 and 3. We can talk of God. Many times when we talk of God, we don't find the comfort we need. But when God comes and says, be still and know that I am God, everything changes. So all that God would show up in our lives every day, reminding us of who He is. And when He reminds us of who He is, it is also a reminder of who and what we are. What a wonderful God that we have. He's more than any circumstance, more than any foe, more than any obstacle that you'll ever face. We need Him. We need Him desperately. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us first song.